Chapter 56. Something Wrong. A soft knock came at the post outside Egwene's tent. Come, she said, shuffling through the papers on her desk. Gawain slipped in. He'd given up his fine clothing, choosing trousers of brown and a slightly lighter shirt. A warder's color-shifting cloak hung around his shoulders, making him blend into his surroundings. Egwene herself was wearing a regal dress of green and blue. His cloak rustled as he took a seat beside her desk.
Elaine's army is crossing. She sent word that she's on her way to come visit our camp.
Excellent, Egwene said. Gawain nodded, but he was troubled. Such a useful thing, that ball of emotions caused by the bond. If she'd known earlier the depth of his devotion to her, she'd have bonded him weeks ago. What? Egwene asked, setting aside her papers.
Ebarra, he said. He hasn't agreed to meet with you.
Elaine said he might be difficult.
I think he's going to take Althor's side, Gawain said. You can see it in the way he set up camp, apart from everyone else. He sent messengers immediately to the Aiel and to the Tyrans. He's got a good army, Egwene. A huge one, with white cloaks in it.
That doesn't sound likely to make him side with Rand, Egwene said.
Doesn't seem like it makes him likely to side with us either, Gawain said. Egwene. Galad leads the white cloaks.
Your brother?
Yes. Gawain shook his head. This many armies, this many loyalties, all rubbing against one another. Ebarra and his force could be a spark that sends us all up like a firework.
It will be better when Elaine settles in, Egwene said.
Egwene, what if Althor isn't coming? What if he did this to distract everyone from whatever else he's doing?
Why would he do that? Egwene said. He's already proven that he can avoid being found if he wants to. She shook her head. Gawain, he knows he shouldn't break those seals. A part of him does, at least. Perhaps that's why he told me, so I could gather resistance, so I could talk him out of it. Gawain nodded. No further complaint or argument. It was a wonder how he'd changed. He was as intense as ever, yet less abrasive. Ever since that night with the assassins, he had started doing as she asked. Not as a servant, as a partner, dedicated to seeing her will done. It was a wonderful thing. It was also important, since the Hall of the Tower seemed determined to overturn their agreement to let her take charge of dealings with Rand. She looked down at her stack of papers, not a few of which were letters of advice from sitters. But they came to her, rather than circumventing her. That was good, and she couldn't ignore them. She had to make them continue to believe that working with her was for the best. At the same time, she couldn't let them assume that she'd be blown over by a few good shouts. Such a delicate balance. Well, let's go meet your sister, then. Gawain rose, moving smoothly. The three rings he wore on a chain around his neck rattled as he moved. She'd have to ask him again where he'd gotten those. He had been oddly close-mouthed about them. He held open the tent flaps for her, and she stepped out. Outside, the late afternoon sun was hidden by gray clouds. Bryn's soldiers worked busily on a palisade. His army had swelled during the last few weeks, and they dominated the eastern side of the wide, forest-rimmed grassland that had once been known as Merilor. The ruins of the tower fortress that had stood here were strewn across the northern side of the field, moss-covered, nearly hidden by choke vine. Egwene's tent was on a rise, and she could overlook the many armies encamped here. "Is that one new?" she asked, gesturing toward a smaller force that had taken up a position just below the ruins.
"They came on their own," Gawain said. "Farmers, mostly. Not really a true army. Most don't have swords. Pitchforks, wood axes, quarterstaffs. I assume Althor sent them. They started wandering in yesterday."
"Curious," Egwene said. They seemed a varied bunch, with mismatched tents and little understanding of how to set up an army camp. But there did seem to be some 5 or 10,000 of them. Have some scouts keep an eye on them. Gawain nodded. Egwene turned and noted a procession moving through several gateways nearby, setting up camp. The Lion of Andor flew high above them, and the soldiers marched in orderly rows. A procession in red and white had left them and was marching toward Egwene's camp, the banner of the Queen flying above them. Gawain accompanied Egwene across the yellowed grass to meet Elaine. The Andoran Queen had certainly taken her time, only one day until the time specified by Rand. Still, she had come, as had others. Aiel with Darlin from Tyr, and her persuasion had been enough to bring a large contingent of Ilianers, who camped on the western side of the grass. The Kyrianen were Elaine's now, by reports, and were coming through with the Andorans and a large number of men from the Band of the Red Hand. Egwene had sent an offer, and a woman to offer traveling, to King Roedran of Murundi, but she was uncertain if he would come. Even without him, however, a considerable number of the world's nations were represented here, particularly since the flags of Gil'dan and Mayenne could be seen among Perrin's armies. She would have to contact their two rulers and see if she could sway them to her way of thinking. But even if not, surely what she had gathered would be enough to convince Rand to change his plans. Light send it was enough. She didn't want to think of what would happen if he forced her hand. She walked down the pathway, nodding back to sisters, who nodded and accepted, who curtsied, soldiers who saluted, and servants who bowed. Rand would—
It can't be, Gawain said suddenly, freezing in place.
Gawain? She said, frowning. Are you? He took off at a run, across the weed-strewn hill. Egwene looked after him with dissatisfaction. He still had an impulsive streak. Why was he so upset suddenly? It wasn't worry, she could feel that. It was confusion. She hastened after him with as much speed as decorum would allow. Elaine's envoy had stopped in the dead grass. Gawain was on his knees there before someone, an older woman with red-gold hair, standing beside a smiling Elaine, who still sat her horse. Ah, Egwene thought. Her spies had delivered word of this rumor just last night, but she'd wanted to confirm it before speaking to Gawain. Morghaes Trakand lived. Egwene stood back for now. Once she stepped forward, Elaine would have to kiss her ring and the entire procession would bow. That would spoil Gawain's moment. As she waited, the clouds above grew thinner. Suddenly they split, the dark thunderheads pulling back. The sky became an open field of blue, a deep, pure expanse. Elaine's eyes opened wide, and she turned on her horse, looking at Perrin's section of camp. He's come, then, Egwene thought, and the calm is here. The brief moment of peace before the storm that destroys.
You give it a try, Amarin, Andril said, standing with a small group inside a stand of trees near the border of the Black Tower grounds. The stately nobleman concentrated, holding the One Power. Weaves sprang up around him. He was remarkably skillful, considering his short time practicing, and expertly crafted the weave for a gateway. Instead of opening a hole in the air, the weave unraveled and vanished. Imaran turned to the rest of them, sweat streaming down his face. Forming those weaves seemed harder than before, he said. Why won't they work? Evan said. The young man's youthful face flushed with anger, as if the problem with gateways was an insult. Andril shook his head, arms folded. The trees rustled, leaves shimmering, many falling to the ground. Brown, as if it were autumn. That unnerved him. He'd spent some time working the ground during his journeys in life, and had acquired a farmer's sense for right and wrong regarding the land. You try it again, Andril, Evan said. You're always so good with gateways. He glanced at the other three. Candler was the other one there. The aging Andoran farmer wore a deep frown. Of course, Candler often scowled at one thing or another. Andril closed his eyes, emptying himself of all passions, embracing the void. Sayadin shone in there, life and power. He seized it, drinking it in. He opened his eyes to a world that was more vibrant. Could dead plants look both sickly and vibrant at the same time? A strange juxtaposition made possible by Sayadin. He focused. Making gateways came so much easier to him than other weaves did. He'd never understood why. Though he couldn't break even a small rock apart by channeling, he could make a gateway large enough for a wagon to drive through. Loghain had called it impressive. Taim had called it impossible. This time, Andril pushed all of the power he had into his weave. He understood gateways. They made sense. Maybe it was the innate fondness he had for traveling, for discovering new places and new arts. The weaves came together. He didn't notice any of the difficulty that Amarin had mentioned. However, when the familiar slash of light should have come, the weave began to unravel instead. Andril tried to hold to it, pulling it together. For a moment, it looked like that would work. Then the threads slid from his grip, evaporating. The gateway never formed. "The other weaves I've tried all work," Evan said, making a globe of light. "Every one of them."
"Only gateways," Candler said with a grunt.
"It's like," Imaran said, "it's as if something wants to keep us here, in the Black Tower."
"Try them in other places inside the perimeter," Andril said. "But try not to let any of Taim's loyalists see what you're doing. Pretend to be surveying as Taim ordered." The men nodded, the three of them hiking toward the east. Andril left the glade. Norli was standing beside the road, looking about for him. The short, thick-waisted Kyrianan man waved and approached. Andril met him halfway. Norli had an open, inviting smile. Nobody ever suspected him of spying on them, something Andril had put to good use. "You spoke with Mezar?" Andril asked.
"Sure did," Norli replied. "Shared a lunch with him."
Norli waved at Mishrael as they passed him supervising a group of soldiers practicing their weaves. The golden-haired man turned away dismissively.
"And?" Andril asked, tense. "It's not really Mezar," Norli said. "Oh, it has Mezar's face right enough, but it's not him. I can see it in his eyes. Trouble is, whatever the thing is, it has Mezar's memories. Talks right like him, but the smile is wrong. All wrong."
Andril shivered.
"It has to be him, Norli." "It ain't, I promise you that." "But it just ain't," the stout man said.
Andril took a deep breath. When Mezar had returned a few days back, explaining that Loghain was well and that all would soon be resolved with Taim, Andril had begun to hope that there was a way out of this mess. But something had seemed off about the man. Beyond that, the Mahale had made a great show of accepting Mezar as a full Ashaman. The dragon had raised him. And now Mezar, once fiercely loyal to Loghain, was spending his time with Kerteran and the other Taim lackeys.
"This is getting bad, Andril," Norli said softly, smiling and waving toward another group of practicing men. "I'd say it's time for us to leave here, whether or not it's against orders."
"We'd never get past those guard posts," Andril said. "Taim won't even let those Aes Sedai leave. You heard the fit that plump one threw at the gates the other day. Taim doubles the guard at night and gateways don't work."
"Well, we have to do something, don't we? I mean, what if they've got Loghain? What then?"
I don't know. "Go talk to the others who are loyal to Loghain. I'm going to move us to a shared barrack. Them and their families. We'll tell the Mahale that we want to give more space for his new recruits. Then we'll post a guard at nights."
That's going to be a little obvious.
The division is already obvious, Andril said. Go do it.
Sure thing. But what are you going to do?
Andril took a deep breath. I'm going to find us some allies. Norley moved off to the left, but Andril continued down the path through the village. It seemed that fewer and fewer people were showing him respect these days. Either they were afraid to do so, or they'd thrown their lot in with Taim. Packs of black-coated men stood, with arms folded, watching him. Andril tried not to feel a chill. As he walked, he noted Mezar, hair graying at the sides, skin a Domani copper, standing with a group of lackeys. The man smiled at him. Mezar hadn't ever been one who smiled easily. Andril nodded to him, meeting his eyes. And he saw what Norley had seen. Something was deeply wrong, something not quite alive inside those eyes. This didn't seem to be a man, but a parody of one, a shadow stuffed inside human skin.
Light help us all, Andril thought, hurrying by.
He made his way to the southern side of the village, to a group of small huts with bleached white wood walls and thatched roofs that needed to be replaced. Andril hesitated outside. What was he doing? This was where the women of the Red Aja were staying. They said they'd come to bond the Ashaman, but they hadn't done it so far. That was probably some kind of ruse. Perhaps they'd come here to try to find a way to gentle the entire lot. But if that were the case, then at least he could count on them not siding with Taim. When you stared down the gullet of a lionfish, a pirate's brig didn't seem so bad. Andril had heard the saying once while working a fisher's boat in the south. Taking a deep breath, he knocked. The plump red answered the door. She had the ageless face of an Aes Sedai. Not young, really, but also not old. She eyed him. I hear you want to leave the Black Tower, Andril said, hoping he was doing the right thing.
Has your Mihail changed his mind? She asked, sounding hopeful.
She actually smiled, a rare action for an Aes Sedai.
No, Andril said. So far as I know, he still forbids you to leave.
She frowned. Then, Andril lowered his voice. You're not the only one who would like to leave this place, Aes Sedai. She looked at him, her face becoming perfectly calm. She doesn't trust me, he thought. Odd how the mere lack of emotion could itself convey meaning. Desperate, he took a step forward, laying a hand on the frame of the door.
Something's wrong in this place. Something worse than you understand. Once, long ago, men and women who worked the power strove together. They were stronger for it. Please, hear me out.
She stood for a moment longer, then pulled the door open.
Come in quickly. Tarna, the woman I share this hut with, is away. We must be done before she returns.
Andril stepped up into the building. He didn't know whether he was stepping into the pirate's brig or the lionfish's mouth. But it would have to do.